Okay. Well, hopefully everyone enjoyed the discussion groups. It looked like people were moving amongst the various ones, so hopefully everyone learned and contributed. Thanks again to the discussion leaders up here with me. We'll just go in order, so I'll turn first to Tosi, and if the secretariat can pull up the slide.
Thank you, Sarah. Well, I'm going to ask the secretariat for next time to give me more interesting questions because there was actually a problem with the rate of attrition because we started with a large number of participants, but at the end, not many people were left. I guess next time I'll have to do a better job. But we had some interesting discussions, and of course, our group was to address two questions. The first one was, what are the tools developing country parties can use to assess and communicate their adaptation needs, including related to support in both quantitative and qualitative terms, was the first question. And then the second question was, what capacity gaps are there and what support will help address these? And then we had to finish with the next steps. And I guess we had interesting insight and inputs, mainly from the Cook Islands, Angola, China, Dominican Republic, and other colleagues. And what I liked most was that most of the tools that were produced by countries in order to make that assessment are tools which are nationally driven, which are, in a way, bottom-up. Also, it was interesting to hear from the Dominican Republic because they explained that that effort, that endeavor they had to undertake was based on national legislation. Oftentimes, countries do it because it comes from an international recommendation, but it was good to see that some countries are really mainstreaming these tools in order for them to be able to make those assessments. So those are some of the tools that were identified. Interesting to know that, for example, China undertook a two-pronged effort, I will say. One was the development of a national strategy, which was important because it involved not only trying to make a quantitative assessment of the needs or the gaps, but also involving a lot of people from the research side in order to improve the qualitative element of that effort. The TNA of China was supported by some international partner and addressed some key sectors. Maybe we can go to the next slide. Of course, some gaps were identified because oftentimes many of those reports are produced with the support of international consultants. Some of them are flown in and then flown out of the country, and sometimes you wondering what's left. And of course, once those documents have been produced with the support from international consultants, you have to go into maybe implementation mode. And therefore, if there was capacity in order to produce those reports, of course there will be some gaps also in terms of translating those reports into sound action or policy. We also noticed that sometimes there wasn't enough multi-stakeholder involvement. It's important when you do this type of effort to ensure that you really have feedback from as many diverse people concerned as possible. There was also a discussion about what role could the private sector play. And of course, many of us developing countries will be happy to see our adaptation needs being funded by public finance. But you have to recognize that sometimes the private sector has a vested interest when it comes to adaptation because of supply chains, because of certain production activities that can be impacted by adverse effects of climate change. So in terms of next steps, the group felt like there could be some scaling up of public finance that could create a trigger effort so that private sector could also be brought into the equation. So public sector money could be used as a catalyst for private sector money. It will be also important because we came up with this galaxy of reports. It's important now maybe to look at how they can work together, we can identify synergies, and actually make an assessment of the coherence of those reports so that we can measure the effectiveness when it comes to adaptation action. And I believe this is an issue really at the core of this discussion. It's how to create indicators to analyze the impact of the adaptation measures, but to have qualitative indicators and to have quantitative indicators, because it will really help bring more clarity in the discussion and see how to identify the most efficient actions that could be undertaken. Also, something which is not captured in the slide is this discussion that countries will have to undertake when mainstreaming their adaptation action, trying to look at disaster risk management. Because of course nobody wishes it, but sometimes nature strikes in a harsh way and countries have no choice but try to cope with events that they didn't plan. So how can you edge that? And is this core adaptation or is it more something that has to do with disaster risk management? So it's an open question that was left from the discussion, but which I felt needed to be addressed also. Thank you.
Thanks, Tosi. It sounds like even though you had a smaller group, you had a quite rich and lively discussion. So thanks for sharing that summary. Unless anyone that did participate in that group has any reactions or would like to add anything to the takeaway. No, looks like we have a taker.
And I also wanted to thank Isis from St. Vincent and the Grenadines, who was my rapporteur and who helped me take very good notes.
Good.
Yes. Thank you. I'm Min Peng from China, and actually I think the gaps I think the insufficient public finance is also very important gaps. So that's why we propose that in the next steps we should scale public finance. Thank you.
Thanks so much. I will now turn to Janine for group two.
Thank you very much, Sarah. And I was taking a moment to reflect on what Tosi was saying, but also to reflect on what we had in our discussion in breakout group two, which looked at forms of support to translate needs into action, adaptation needs into action. We had a very rich discussion. We had a very diverse group. And I thank everyone for participating. And I thank my colleague from Singapore for serving as rapporteur and the secretariat colleagues. It's very difficult to, I think, effectively capture what was discussed because it had a wide range of issues, and I feel as though I actually need a little bit more time to reflect on it, but I'll do my best to do justice to the discussion. I think when we look at needs and action, what we saw in terms of the needs part was getting a clear understanding of needs in the adaptation context. We heard from one of our colleagues that needs can be very diverse, depending on level and scale. And so there's always a challenge of aggregating very diverse needs into something of a national framework. And then we also heard of the importance of differentiating needs for adaptation in the context of, say, technology transfer. On the action side, we looked at both actors and finance itself. What is the source of translating needs to action? Well, obviously you need someone to do it, and you need money to do it. So we looked at the subnational, national interplay, and private and public. And I know you're looking at that slide thinking, where in the world is she going? But these are my reflections. I will get to the slide. And so the bridge, I guess, between the need and the action that came out through the discussion were, first of all, bankable projects, so translating your national plans into, or your adaptation, what you've identified as adaptation needs through whatever mechanism, into instruments that would be useful for the private sector to tap into or to access funding at the international scale. And then, of course, the ability to engage stakeholders. So when you look at the slide before you, it would have captured various ways in which that bridge of dealing with the bankable projects and engaging stakeholders and engaging the private sector can best be done through the intergovernmental process. So addressing the issue of capacity building, which we don't have a second slide, but we spoke of the issue of the readiness program, looking at the linkages across entities in order to build synergies and work towards addressing some of the capacity building and project preparation issues. We looked at the importance also within that context of the ensuring that there is a proper flow of information. So we have, so we're able to connect the discussions from the national right down to the local. Another area that was focused upon potentially is how technology can assist in supporting the aggregation of needs. So the way in which we capture data, in fact, might be an area of further translating the or activating that bridge between needs and action. On the private sector side, what was very clear is that in order for the private sector to engage on issues relating to adaptation, there needs to be a better translation of the national plans into something that the private sector can actually work with. And I don't know that it's reflected there. Yes, what is the risk or duration of investment? What is the return? What is the role of the public and private sector? Those issues wouldn't necessarily need to be addressed. And the question was raised whether or not the DFIs themselves have a role to play and could have a role in terms of translating or breaking down that language that we have at the national scale into something that, that's more usable for the private sector. A very heavy emphasis on the importance of the role of public finance, especially where in the context of adaptation, it's not a profit-driven or a big return type of issue on investment. So the role of public finance continues to be incredibly important in that regard. There was also the address, the issue of addressing the synergies between the Sustainable Development Goals and implementing the needs, because there are clearly some cross-cutting issues when it comes to addressing adaptation in the context of national development planning processes. And finally, we also addressed the issue of how to better translate our understanding of various scenarios and basically science into adaptation needs, and then into projects that would be implemented on the ground. That is, in a nutshell, what we covered. I hope that that was that did justice to what we spoke on. But I would welcome any views to supplement. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Janine. Does anyone have any reactions or additions to the slide that haven't yet been captured? No? All right, you did good. Well done. All right, I'm going to turn to Gabriella now for the third group.
Thank you, Sarah, and thanks to all the participants. We also had a very rich discussion and a lively input from various countries. Thanks to Lydia from Canada for being the rapporteur and taking the notes on the flip chart, which we tried to capture together with the secretary. Thanks also for that. On the slides. So we were trying to address the question on how adaptation needs and enabling environments can be better integrated in the relevant planning and budgetary processes in developing countries. And the main elements we discussed was very clearly came through that the policy framework is essential, and there's three aspects to it. There's the legal, the technical, and the financial dimension of the policy framework, which have to be aligned in order to make sure that this mainstreaming works better. And several of the best practice cases which were shared with us have something like a framework policy on a national level, which then enables them to take action with various ministries to actually implement that policy. Mainstreaming was mentioned several times, and it was highlighted that adaptation is a cross-sectoral issue. It touches upon all sectors and all levels of government, so we have to ensure that we really do the mainstreaming across all levels of government and across the sectors. And for that, it was highlighted that an improved institutional architecture is needed to facilitate this mainstreaming. You also heard some best practice and some cases from various countries on how they address this. We agreed that stakeholder buy-in is essential, and we need it on various levels, not just on a very high political level, which we agreed that was important, but also on the technical levels throughout the entire cycle when you do a national adaptation plan, for example. So you start to engage with all ministries at the beginning, but also for the endorsement to make sure it's really owned by all stakeholders, you should also have that at the end of the cycle process. And then there was also mentioned that there's bottom-up and top-down approaches to this. You can start at the very local level and showcase evidence-based what adaptation really benefits you and mainstream upwards, or you can do it the other way around, and the best approach is probably to do both and address adaptation from all sides. And then actions and next steps that countries or within the process could be taken forward. So knowledge sharing was identified as being crucial because there's many best practices around. Countries can replicate each other's cases. They can learn from each other. So it's flagged maybe just to have a platform or something so that countries also can go home and show at home how to do these best practices to convince their Ministry of Finance, for example, to put more money into adaptation. Then it was also linked to your item, the international engagement also came up, and it was highlighted that it would be interesting if international actors would engage more and cooperate more with the Maldivian countries to build up the capacity to actually do that and to do that mainstreaming approach and improve the planning and budgetary processes across, so the SCT kind of thing links into that as well. And then we heard several best practice examples on budget-specific tracking and tagging of climate expenditure. So understanding how much of your domestic budget already goes into adaptation and mitigation finance, also identifying the co-benefits, and that is also makes a case across the ministries because you can show that all the ministries are already investing a certain amount of money into adaptation. Maybe they don't even realize it because they do it through other means. And then it was highlighted that the science-based evidence and the data has to be improved so we can also include better track results, but in general, like, make the case so that's also a reflection back. And then it was a very interesting example also saying, well, we just showed the cost of inaction, so how much would it cost if we don't do anything, and that's so much higher than if we actually take action. So it was the best way to convince domestic policymakers to actually take action. So that I thought that was an interesting case as well. Thanks again, everyone, for the really interesting discussion.
All right, thanks, Gabriela. It sounds like another really great conversation. We're now over time, so we don't want to keep you any longer, but sincere thanks for your attendance and active participation in the morning segment. We're going to resume promptly at 3 p.m., so please enjoy your lunch, and we will see you back here at 3. Thanks.